no doubt that Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more. And he has the ability to dispense these lethal poisons and diseases in ways that can cause massive death and destruction.
That was Secretary of State Colin Powell at the UN Security Council today. Of course, he was making the case against Iraq. Very quickly here, here's the Iraqi response.
We have nothing to hide. Therefore, we don't talk about hiding anything or congratulating ourselves for hiding anything. This is simply manufactured evidence. It's not true at all.
That's the Iraqi ambassador to the United Nations, Mohammed al-Duri, responding to Secretary of State Colin Powell's case against Iraq. I'd like your reaction to this. This is probably the biggest news story. Both of these statements, those made by Secretary of State Colin Powell and by Mohammed al-Duri in response, are going to be gone over, of course, with a fine-tooth comb. And no one really knows what the actual outcome of these two statements is going to be at this point, because it appeared in the United Nations that most of the responses made by the various nations on the United Nations Security Council were prepared in advance, and therefore we'll find out in the next couple of days how well Colin Powell's arguments went over with that particular group. What's your reaction? Do you think that Secretary of State Colin Powell made the case against Iraq for a preemptive war against Iraq? Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. It is open lines for the remainder of the program today, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's narrow that question a bit. He could have made a case for some type of preemptive war, but I guess what I'm really curious about is, did he make a case justifying war according to the way Christian just war theory requires a war be justified? Remember, just war theory is not about whether or not war is moral. War is not moral. It's always evil. It may be a necessary evil. It may be the lesser of two evils. It's not about whether war is moral. And it's not about whether or not Christians ought to individually fight in a war. That's not the question. The question is any war justified? Historically, there have been three criteria for a justified war in the teaching of the Christian church. The first is there just authority? That is this war being waged by an authority that has the recognized power and authority to make war? The second criteria, is there just cause for the war? And the third, is there just intention or a rightful intention? What do you think? Did Colin Powell make the case to justify war, for a just war? The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. I'd like your answer to that question. Surely you have an opinion. Everyone seems to. Now, my opinions on this are really rather strong. They have been for some time. I told you, perhaps you didn't hear when I had mentioned this in passing several days ago, that my own youngest brother, who is an engineer down in Fort Worth, also a first lieutenant in the Army Reserves, was activated, or he was told he's going to be activated, an involuntary transfer to the 3rd Armored Cavalry. And perhaps as we speak, perhaps, who knows yet, on his way down to Fort Hood for some training and then on his way to the theater of war, maybe Turkey, maybe Iraq. Someone asked me whether that changed my mind about the war. My answer was, I don't know. But what my brother told me was, he's got a 3-year-old daughter. He said, I don't want my daughter living in fear of some biological, chemical, or nuclear mushroom cloud. So he's ready to go do what he has to do. Nobody wants him to go. No one who sends someone off to war wants them to go. I think we could argue that no one, even the president and Colin Powell himself, want to do this. The question is it justified and is it necessary? Do you think the case was made today? This is the announcement that everyone was waiting for after the State of the Union address, because it was, of course, announced by the president that this would be the case, the best evidence, the best set of facts that they could present, and they're presenting to the people who ostensibly will give approval or disapproval. What do you think? If you were sitting on the Security Council, if you are one of those skeptics with regard to whether or not this war is justified, do you think the case was made today? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Did he make a case for proper authority? Did he make a case for a just cause against Iraq? Did he make the case for a rightful intention? Those are the things that are being questioned, in fact, well, questioned all over the place, from protesters on the streets to politicians in their offices. And here is John Shelby Spong, writing for BeliefNet.com. The question he asks in his column, is this war necessary? Now, I so often disagree with everything John Shelby Spong says, as many of you do. However, he's asking the right question. That is the right question. That is the question that was at least an attempted answer to that question was given by Secretary of State Colin Powell today before the UN Security Council. And then Spong asks this question, do we secretly yearn for a war we know how to win? Is this a war driven by oil? Is war ever moral? His last question is bogus because, of course, few contend that war is a moral endeavor. The Christian Church has, throughout its history, recognized that war does not need to be moral in order to be justified. War is bad. There's not a lot about war that's good. And those who've had both the privilege, the duty, and in some cases, the sad responsibility of serving in war will tell you that. This is what Spong says under the question, is this war necessary? She sailed from San Diego early January. If she knew her destination, she did not share it with her friends. She had been meticulously trained to fly a helicopter. In recent weeks, she has mastered the skill of landing this wobbly craft on a ship. She is also engaged in urban warfare training. Who is this young woman? She is an officer in the United States Navy, the daughter of a very close friend of mine, a person I have known since she was a child and for whom I have great affection. For me, she becomes the single face who invades the eye of my mind when I think about my nation's relentless march toward war. Undoubtedly, this young officer is headed for a military conflict. My government has determined that she, along with countless other men and women in our armed forces, are to be placed in harm's way. In carrying out her duties, she may well be engaged in the act of killing other people. That is the reality of war. She may also become a victim of someone else's military purpose. She might even wind up a prisoner of war. In the culture of Iraq, where women are treated shamefully, this is the specter that fills me with the deepest sense of dread. My knowledge of this young woman has changed the nature of my questions about this war. They are no longer academic. They are now deeply personal and existential. Is Iraq a cause worth the sacrifice of her life or that of others? Is war itself any longer a legitimate means for solving political disputes? Can an alternative not be found? Now, those are important questions. And as I said, as often as I disagree with John Shelby Spong, at least he is answering or asking, among others, the right questions here. Now, he goes on in his article to say that this is a war about oil. He is going on to say that war is never moral, and therefore he concludes at the end that this is not a war that's worth fighting. He claims to be a voice in the wilderness. I don't think he is. It doesn't take a lot of bravery when you have people standing out on the street corners protesting a war to stand up and say, I'm against it too. I would call this more a voice jumping on the bandwagon. He concludes by saying, maybe you agree, maybe you disagree. I've been surprised, by the way, folks, about who is for and who is against the possibility of war with Iraq. It is simply not broken down along the typical lines. It hasn't. People who think that Saddam Hussein is a terrible madman, a dictator of Hitler-esque proportions, Stalin-esque proportions, with no regard for the life of his own people, much less the lives outside the borders of his nation, who believe him to be fundamentally deceitful and fundamentally dangerous, will at the same time also say, but we should not make war against him. Or they say, we should not make war against him now. It simply isn't as simple as believing Saddam or believing George W. Bush. That's pretty clear. But do you think the case was made today with the best evidence we could give without what compromising other sources of intelligence, that there are things going on in Iraq that they are denying, that they are hiding, and all the while, I find it quite telling, that the Iraqi UN representative's response is, we are hiding nothing. He didn't say we are hiding less than you say we're hiding. He said we're hiding nothing. And he said that all of the evidence brought forth by Colin Powell was, in his words, manufactured. I say it must be pretty damning evidence if he has to say that it's actually manufactured. That if it were true, it would be a case against him. So rather than say, well, it's only partly true, he has to say, it's all made up. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. As with other things, your opinion on this, get it in now, because who knows, tomorrow, next week, or week after that, it might be a moot point. Everyone can be right after the fact. Everyone can be right when we send troops in there and God forbid, they are subject to attacks by poison gas. Then everyone says, well, of course, we knew all along he had something, didn't we? Where opinions account in this matter is now, not after the first shot is fired. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up first, Bob calling from his car. Bob, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about these people that are voices in the wilderness. I kind of think they're lost in the wilderness, wandering around, don't know where they're at. There is one truth, though, and we hear this objection.
Oh, we just lost you, Bob.
I think we
Bob, you're cutting in and out. If you would find a better area of reception, we'd love to hear what you have to say. But your phone just cut out on us long enough that we couldn't catch what you were saying. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This is how Spong concludes his article when he asked the question whether or not this war is necessary. I believe this proposed war on Iraq is an irresponsible mistake of a failed foreign policy. I believe it is wrong. I believe it is evil. I believe this war is being engaged for reasons that are not publicly stated and may not even be fully conscious in the minds of those who pursue them. But this is amazing. He is a mind reader, he is. He can read the minds of people who don't even know what they themselves are thinking. I do not believe that this war is in my country's long-term or short-term best interest, nor is it a response to a real threat to America's security. I believe that this war, when successfully completed, will result primarily in increased despair among young Middle Eastern Muslim men and women, which will spawn a generation of terrorists who value their own lives so little that they would be willing and eager volunteers to die in suicidal passion if they can hurt, wound, or kill those who they hold responsible for their plight. They will have to learn the terrifying lesson that there is no military power so great, no atomic arsenal so enormous, no economy so powerful that it cannot be defeated by millions of alienated and hopeless fanatics who are willing to become martyrs for their cause. He almost sounds like he's hoping for this stuff. I believe that a government that would ask our young adults to sacrifice their lives in pursuit of these ill-thought-out goals has surrendered its claim to both my loyalty and my respect. I raise my voice in protest. I hope I am not alone. Read the papers, John. Bob's back calling from his car, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Bob, welcome back. Sorry about the bad connection.
Yeah, the second cell phone. Maybe I'll get luckier. Okay, boy, there's so much going on, isn't there? I'm thinking, first of all, oil does play a little bit in this, but it's not a negative. Our president, who I'm developing a great respect for, is looking out for the flow of something that the entire world depends upon, like a lifeline. To say that we're going there for oil and somehow implying that that's some selfish thing that George Bush is doing is insane. This is something that's incredibly important to the enterprise and the security of the entire world. And to make that case that somehow this is oil is nothing but empty rhetoric. Just, I think it's sick.
All right.
And you know, concerning the Islamic fundamentalists that are going to be coming against us, hey, get ready. They're coming anyway. They don't like us anyway. They're just, this isn't going to cause that to happen. If anything at all, we may be looking at a last-ditch effort to try to bring some stability to a situation and get these people to break their stranglehold over an entire population.
Now,
even the moderates are influenceable by these people. If we don't do something to stabilize that region, who knows where it's going to go?
Okay, so Bob, let's go through this in kind of a systematic way, very briefly, before I let you go. There are three historical criteria for justifying a war. This is basically kind of the classic Christian teaching on just war. The three are just authority, that is, whoever wages war has to actually have the authority to do it. That would rule out, you know, mercenaries and vigilante groups and stuff like that, okay, or terrorists.
I buy that.
The first is just authority. You think the case is made today by Colin Powell with regard to just authority?
And I think a fair statement on that is, who do you trust more, Saddam Hussein or George Bush?
All right, the second is just cause. That is, the cause needs to be not necessarily moral, but justified, a justifiable cause for war. Do you think Colin Powell and the others have made their case?
Do you think you could create a longer list of atrocities committed by someone without going back to World War II Germany to come up with a list of justifications for going in and a police action against someone?
And then finally, just intention, and this is not the intention of individual soldiers. This is really the intention of those who are publicly waging the war, is, and this goes to like grabbing for land as opposed to trying to free captive peoples, things like that. Do you think that the case was made for a just intention by Colin Powell?
Yes, I do, and I'll tell you what, that's why I bring up the oil point. Oil does play a little bit in this, but not for a selfish reason. It's really totally unselfish. I don't see us going in there defeating Iraq and somehow then stealing their resources. I see us rather making those resources available to contribute to the prosperity of the people who actually own them, which is the Iraqi people. That's what I see.
Bob, thank you very much. Very articulate call. Thank you for calling. What about the rest of you? Bob says, point for point, authority, cause, intention. The case has been made and was made this morning to justify war with Iraq. What do you think? Do you have any misgivings? Don't be afraid to express some misgivings here. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It is open lines, issues, etc. for the next 35 minutes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Some are worried because, of course, the pace of events here in the United States over the last year or two have been breakneck. There's no doubt about it. We had September 11th, and there are those who are arguing on either side of the issue that if we wouldn't have had September 11th, we wouldn't be talking about Iraq today. I don't know if that's true. Weapons of mass destruction are weapons of mass destruction, whether or not you have terrorist attacks. Do you think, did you hear the argument from Colin Powell on the connection to the terrorists and in particular to Al-Qaeda? Did you pay close attention? Do you think he made a case there? Because that's part of the just cause argument. In other words, everyone agrees that we ought to eliminate the danger and the threat of terrorism. And the just cause argument goes like this. If there is a definite link between the Iraqi government, that regime, and our known enemies, be it Al-Qaeda or the Taliban, whatever it may be, other known terrorist organizations who wish us ill, if we can make this connection, there's just cause against Iraq. The just cause against the terrorist transfers by means of association and direct connection to Iraq itself. Do you think that case was made? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And as I said, if you have those misgivings, this is the time to express them, not after the first fire is shot. John Shelby Spong, in I think something of rhetorical flourishes, is claiming to be a voice in the wilderness, and he asks at the end of his, plaintively at the end of his article, is this war necessary? I hope I'm not alone. Am I alone? this is the first war for a long time that has had sizable protest before the fact. The Gulf War came upon us so suddenly, was required of such necessity because of the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait, that I don't think people who would have wanted to protest had time to gear up for it. This one has come on us slowly over 2 years, as I said, with a breakneck speed of events. And people are wondering, are we acting in haste? That seems to be the argument of those on the Security Council who say, it may come to that, but let's not be hasty. Do you think that God would approve, by way of saying, yes, this is necessary, do you think God would approve of a preemptive strike against Iraq? If God sat on the UN Security Council, would his reaction have been, the case is made? Or would he have responded like one of the others, or perhaps even the Iraqi ambassador, no case, no smoking gun? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. I don't know whether or not we had someone call a couple weeks ago, it seems, if memory serves, who told us the story of their protest of the Vietnam War when they were younger. And they had a list of reasons. They were very articulate, a very good list of reasons why they were protesting the Vietnam War. And then they said, but now, with maturity, with age and wisdom, and with a bigger picture on the international scene, they are not in protest of a preemptive war on Iraq. Yesterday we talked with Uwe Simonetto, and he asked the question whether or not the war protests, some of which are being run out of Christian organizations and out of Christian denominations, out of the National Council of Churches, that has an entire, they have someone who is hired and paid to organize peace protests on behalf of the National Council of Churches. I heard him interviewed a couple weeks ago. This is his job. This is what he does. He travels the country getting little groups together to make big groups and to protest the war. Uwe Simonetto wonders, well, will the peace protest turn sour as they did during Vietnam? Namely, when the soldiers come back, after all is said and done, will they be treated the way that the Vietnam veterans were treated? Will they be turned out of churches, away from altars, away from communion rails? Do you share the same fear? He said something yesterday, Uwe did, that I thought was very telling. When I asked him about the Germans' reluctance to approve UN action and resolutions for further action against Iraq, he said, there's a German saying that fear is a bad counselor, and he said that's what is ruling the German nation is fear. I wonder, does that apply in our case too? It's a fearful story that Colin Powell told this morning. Would you say in response that fear is a bad counselor? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. The break, by the way, is a great time to call. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I receive, review, and read a lot of books in preparation for the broadcast hours of Issues, Etc. Sad to say, some of what Christian publishing produces isn't worth reading, but some is. That's why we have the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is Testing the Claims of Church Growth. You can order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House during regular business hours. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Testing the Claims of Church Growth. You can also order the book online. Go to our Issues Etc. website at issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and there you'll find a link to Concordia Publishing House. The book, Testing the Claims of Church Growth. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February. 1-800-325-3040.
Interracial marriage from God's perspective.
Answers with Ken Ham.
president of the Answers in Genesis Ministries. Well, Ken, does the Bible have anything to say at all about interracial marriage?
Let's think about this carefully. How would you answer the following question? I'm going to list four combinations of married couples, and I want you to consider which one would God be against according to the Bible. First, a Christian man with almond-shaped eyes and a Christian woman with Caucasian eyes. Second, a non-Christian man married to a non-Christian woman. Third, a Christian man with dark skin and a Christian woman with light skin. Fourth, a non-Christian Caucasian married to a Christian Caucasian woman. You know, from a biblical perspective, it's the last one, obviously. The only one of those marriages that God clearly speaks against in the Bible is the Christian marrying a non-Christian. This is what I call an interracial marriage. It's when a child of the last Adam marries a child of the first Adam. Sadly, because so many Christians have been indoctrinated by evolutionary ideas, they think humankind is divided into different physical races. Many end up concerned about people from so-called different races marrying rather than whether or not they are equally yoked spiritually, which is the most important thing in marriage.
More fascinating information on this topic is found in Ken Ham's booklet on the origin of races. He'll offer a Genesis solution to the problem of racism. The book is available free by going to our website, AnswersRadio.com.
Good evening, 5:31 at AM 850 KFUO. Weather for St. Louis, cloudy tonight with snow late, low of about 23. For Thursday, periods of snow, accumulation of no more than 1 to 3 inches, high near 32 tomorrow. Right now, overcast and 34 in St. Louis. Our last look at St. Louis traffic, westbound 40 at Kings Highway, slow traffic to Hanley, also busy but moving, McKnight through Lindbergh, and 270 to Mason, northbound 270 at Dorset Road, heavy traffic, then slow in the west 70 exit lane. Eastbound 270 between McDonald Boulevard and 170, there's some heavy traffic there. Eastbound 40 between Grand and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic there. And northbound 55 between Park Avenue and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic in the right lane. That's traffic and weather on AM 850 KFUO. More issues, etc. Open lines is next. Send your sweetheart a cheetah adoption from the St. Louis Zoo for Valentine's Day. Your donation goes directly to the care and feeding of these animals for 1 year. The gift also includes a Valentine's Day card, lovable plush toy cheetah, personalized certificate of adoption, color photo, and fact sheet on cheetahs. Your Valentine gift can be sent anywhere in the country. To place an order, call or visit the St. Louis Zoo.
It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. 25 minutes left in the hour, 25 minutes left in the show, and plenty of time for you to give us a call in answer to the question. After what Colin Powell had to say this morning to the UN Security Council and to the world and to our nation, everyone was listening. Do you think he made the case based upon the classic criteria for just war being a just authority behind the war, a just cause, and a just intention? Do you think he made the case? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'd like your answer to that question. Does a preemptive strike against Iraq, which it appears it would be, does it meet these criteria? Just authority, just cause, and just intention. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Before I go to the phones, let me say again, I'm not asking you to come down on one side or the other at this point. There are many of you who, like many of you, are undecided. You don't know what you think about this. If that is the case, give us a call, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, and tell me what's keeping you on the fence. Let's start with Mark, who's calling from his car. Mark, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Pastor Todd, I have a question about the just war doctrine.
Yes.
That being, in one sense, you're talking about it as whether it's moral to act. I'm wondering whether it also makes it or defines whether it is immoral to act. In other words, if somebody is being mugged, all right, or a woman is being assaulted, and, you know, if I'm standing there telling the woman that this is something she has to endure, or if I'm telling the person who's assaulting her that, you know, this is really wrong what he's doing. And when he ignores me, I say it's really, really wrong. Or if I say I'll only act if everybody will help me. I'm just wondering if it's also not telling us that it's immoral not to act. And this is not, I guess, to address what Colin Powell said, but just the larger question.
Well,
Mark.
I think it's straight to the point, actually, of my question and to the issue of what Colin Powell laid out as a case. Because what you're really doing is outlining, there are two different ways of talking about this. The argument for a necessary evil or the argument for a lesser of two evils. In other words, is it the lesser of two? Both things would be bad, would result in trouble and evil. Either to act, people are going to die, okay? Or to not act, as far as we can tell, there's the threat that people are going to die, all right? The question that is being weighed by everyone, especially with regard to whether or not this is just, is it, which is the lesser of the two evils? To act now, or to not act at all? And that's the precisely the question that people are mulling over in their minds right now. And it is a question that people ought to... I'm glad you bring it up, because just war teaching simply doesn't say, when do you have the option of war? It asks the question, when will at times war even be necessary? Because not to engage in war would be worse. Thank you very much for the call, Mark. I appreciate it. Now, I know many of you are undecided, still sitting on the fence. You are not for or against. You don't know what to think about it yet. Maybe there's not enough evidence. Maybe you're not quite sure about why we're doing this or why we might do it. If you have those concerns or those questions, enter the conversation, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Ann is calling from Crestwood. Hi, Ann.
Hi, thank you, Todd. I am not on the fence, and I wasn't on the fence before. I support George Bush completely. And after today, I was talking to friends recently saying, and we were discussing this, and I said, I think Bush knows things that we don't know, and maybe we don't need to know everything. Well, after Colin Powell spoke today, we now know some things, and I don't think that's a fluke. I trust them implicitly. I think George Bush has... I come to the presidency on a fluke almost, but I shudder to think what would happen if Gore was our president right now. I think the buildup over there would go on for who knows how long. I have a son that's 20 years old, and if things get bad enough, I wouldn't be surprised if they would call up the draft. And my dear son, whom I love incredibly, would probably get called up. He's not a student. He's working full-time. In spite of that, I think this would be a just war based on the three principles you stated.
Now, just a couple questions here to kind of test out the statement you made there at the beginning of your call, and that is, let's say for the sake of argument, we were having this conversation 5 years ago, and the situation were as it is 5 years ago, and President Bill Clinton were still president in the White House,
mm-hmm.
and his Secretary of State went to the U.N., making the case, the same case, and the arguments were all the same, would you still feel the same way about it?
I did not trust Clinton. I trusted almost nothing he said. The only time I felt he was earnest or sincere was after Columbine. He actually seemed shaken to me, but other than that, I never trusted him.
So really, you have admitted here, Anne, that it's not so much the force of the arguments, that the arguments are just kind of icing on the cake for you. It really has been more your personal trust and affinity toward this president and the men he has chosen to serve under him.
I think yes.
All right. Well, I thank you for your honesty. My goodness, I thank you for your honesty, because it's darn hard to find an honest Christian out there nowadays. Most of them will say, no, it's the arguments that swayed me. Well, then why wouldn't the same arguments under Bill Clinton sway you? Thank you for your honesty, Ann. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Any other honest Christians out there who want to... I'm like Heraclitus. That was the guy who couldn't step in the same river twice. What was the name of this philosopher who walked around the city with a lantern lit in the middle of the day looking for a honest man? Oh, my goodness. You think you'll never forget these things, and then you push 40... and you forget it all. At least I remember he was walking around the city with a lit lantern at broad daylight looking for an honest man. That's who I am today, looking for an honest Christian who is sitting on the fence or who isn't sitting on the fence, who is willing to say why they think this war is justified. Was it the case made today? Was it the case made for you long ago? Was it simply a matter of September 11th that decided it for you, time to go after Iraq? Or maybe there's some niggling doubt in your mind that says, look, it just seemed like we went too quickly from Osama bin Laden to Saddam Hussein. And not all the dots have been connected for me. What do you think? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And if anybody knows who that philosopher was, please let me know. I know it's not Heraclitus because he was the guy who couldn't step in the same river twice. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And by way of interesting things, I have some other things to share with you in just a minute. Wade is calling from his car. Wade, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd, I think you just made a very good point. Could you help put the dots together for me? Or has there ever been anything stated that the previous administration has neglected, therefore passed on to next administration? Because it does seem like... I need that sort of information.
What do you mean? What are you asking for?
Well, I'm asking about if this was the violations were there in the previous administration. Are we cleaning up the mess of the previous administration?
Well, to answer your question in general, Wade, every present administration spends much of its time cleaning up the mess, so-called mess, of the previous administration. You know, what was it? Bill Clinton claimed he was cleaning up the mess of the Reagan-Bush era. Bush could probably make an equal claim, although I don't think he plays this card very much, that he's cleaning up the mess of the Clinton-Gore era. So, you know, everyone makes that case. Now, as to what we knew and when we knew it, I think that's really your question. It's without a doubt that the inspections that were carried out in 1995-96 discovered weapons of mass destruction and destroyed them. The question is, did they discover them all? Now, here's the question for you, Wade. There are the three classic criteria for just war: a just authority, a just cause, a just intention. Do you think on each of those points the case has been made or was made this morning by Colin Powell before the UN National Security Council?
I'm not prepared to make that answer. Sir, I can't bring that to the table.
All right.
To answer that, but I just want to.
Well, do you think the case has been
heard? Something that because I have never heard him mention that we are trying to take care of something that's lingering here. I just want to know if you had heard anything about that.
Hadn't heard anything except for the fact that it was during the Clinton administration. No, this is not a cut on Clinton. It was during the Clinton administration that the majority of these inspections took place. Because who was president for the last 12 years? It wasn't George W. Bush. That doesn't mean that things weren't done that should have been done. The lack of will to carry out inspections seems to run across administrations. Right, he wasn't president for 12 years. I won't give him three terms. What? Oh, nothing. Okay, I'm sorry. He's in there making guttural sounds, and I don't know what they mean. And I don't really care. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Sandy's up next, calling from Alton. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got up out of a sick bed to answer your philosopher question.
Oh, my goodness.
Archimedes.
Archimedes? Someone else said Demosthenes.
Oh, I thought it was Archimedes.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to go to my little dictionary.
Okay.
Someone else is insisting it's Demosthenes.
Perhaps. I thought it was Archimedes. And as far as the war in Iraq, let's roll.
All right. Do you think the case based... I don't want to keep you out of your sick bed. You do sound like you've got something. I don't know what it is.
I took care of my little flu-infested grandson. He's better now. I got it.
Flu shots, Sandy. Flu shots.
I didn't get one.
Well, here's the three-pronged argument that these three must be met in classical Christian teaching in order for a war to be justified. Not moral, but justified.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It must have the rightful authority behind it. It must have a just cause driving it. It must also be engaged with a rightful intention. Do you think that the case has been made up to this point, as of this morning, to meet all three of those criteria.
Absolutely.
Sandy, thank you very much for the call. Go back to bed. What do they say? Gargle with warm salt water. Keep your pillow over your head. Turn on the humidifier. My solution in high school was always lots of jalapenos and beer. Generally killed anything. The jalapenos being the operative vitamin C infusion. It's an amazing cure. Better than the laying on of hands, I should say. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can probably get the same effect by just eating jalapenos and drinking cough syrup. What do the rest of you think? You think we have a case made? These things, on the international scene, these things always have to be engaged in incrementally. Especially if you're going to ask someone like the UN Security Council to go along with you. No one ever is going to be completely satisfied. I am very glad to hear in the press today that no one is calling for absolute proof that there's something going on in Iraq, because absolute proof is an ever-receding standard. Because someone says, okay, he's got 30 weapons with chemical warheads. Well, okay, he's got 30, but maybe we should say that he needs to have 50 before we do anything about 30. He's just 30, for heaven's sakes. What can he do with 30? We can never arrive at absolute proof or an absolute standard here. It's the preponderance of evidence. It's like anything else we do. It's like the courtroom. Certainly circumstantial evidence. Today there were pictures and there was sound. The kind of things that really play in a visual culture. You actually see a satellite photo and hear two guys yakking on the radio about hiding weapons and things like that. Then people say, well, maybe something is going on over there. What do you think? Walt's calling from his car. Walt, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello.
Hello.
Almost lost you there for a second. Have a question for you. I'm more or less in favor of the war, but I would like to know how it can be justified in any way, shape, or form if you consider that Dr. Walther, back during the Civil War, couldn't justify Lutherans going to war for the cause of slavery.
That is a great question. My goodness, that's a great question.
So I'd like to hear your answer.
All right, thank you very much. Well, first of all, I'll begin by saying that just because he was the founder of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod doesn't mean he was always right. All right? Now, there were things that he wrote that were very right. But I think even Dr. Walther would have, and for those who aren't in the know, Dr. C.F.W. Walther was the founding president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He was also the founder of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis, or its first president. And he did it all at the same time while pastoring, believe it or not, about a dozen congregations in the St. Louis area. He wasn't the only pastor, but he was the leader of them all. Well, he also wrote some seminal works upon which Lutherans have made a lot of hay, namely the proper distinction between law and gospel and several other works that don't need to be mentioned here. And it's true. There were two things that he would not do, and one of them he did later only with sincere qualifications. He would not sign a loyalty oath to the Union. He did that only later, and then on the one side of the loyalty oath card, he signed his loyalty oath. On the other side, he wrote all of the qualifications, quoting scripture extensively, of why he thought he must do this, in a sense, under protest. But the other thing that he would not do, and as far as we can tell from his extant writings, he was opposed to the Civil War. He did not think that slavery was a just enough reason to engage in war. The end of slavery. Now, I'm not familiar in detail with his writings there, but I think I'm right on my history. He was struggling with precisely the same questions. Now, I do not know whether he discounted it because it was not a just enough cause, or whether or not it was undertaken without just authority. After all, one part of the country was making war upon another part of the country. Or whether or not he did not believe the intention was right. I mean, if anyone out there knows any more about Walther's opposition to the Civil War, you feel free to help me out, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. He did not claim to speak for the entire Missouri Synod or all Lutherans. I think he claimed to speak merely for himself on this issue. In one sense, this illustrates how people of goodwill and clear conscience can disagree on whether or not a war is justified. I know that the sore thumb here is, well, didn't he think slavery was wrong? Yes, he believed it was wrong, but he didn't believe that it was necessarily something that couldn't exist. Did he believe that slavery, the way that it was being practiced in the United States, was wrong? I have a hard time believing that he couldn't have. I mean, the way it was being practiced. But as a matter of principle, Paul does say to slaves, if you're a slave, do not seek to become free. Speaking to Christian slaves, of course. And commending them in obedience to their masters. And while not advocating slavery, and while writing a very moving short letter in the New Testament called Philemon, concerning one Onesimus, a slave, saying, look, I'm sending him back to you, a slave, but I hope that you will now regard him as a brother. He didn't say set him free. He didn't. He just said, I hope you will now regard him as a brother. Suffice it to say, I think there Walther found sufficient justification to say maybe the ending of slavery, maybe he had kind of like a fix it, don't quit it kind of a philosophy. I don't know. I do not know. But if that were the case, that would have been his justification. Now, what he was doing was he was operating. His conclusions, I would not have come to the same conclusions. I'll be honest with you. If I would have had the same view, I don't know if I were one of those scruffy-haired, pipe-smoking Lutherans of the 19th century, whether I would have thought differently about slavery. I would hope that I wouldn't, but I wouldn't have come to the same conclusion he did. And I don't have to be a Lutheran. That's the good thing about being Lutheran. We're not bound by what Lutherans do or say. We're bound by what the Lutheran confessions teach and what Scripture teaches. But at the very least, he, and I'm sure he was familiar with just war teaching, he was trying to employ that to the best of his ability, saying, is it justified? What you can't do is make an argument from Walther's opposition to the Civil War because of Lutheran, and him being a Lutheran. He was also a German, too. I mean, should all Germans follow in his footsteps? He was also a prolific smoker of pipes, killed birds in his office that he kept in cages by smoking too much. But that is not to say that all pipe smokers or bald-headed men need to follow in his footsteps. We can't argue that because Walther opposed the Civil War, that somehow invalidates the Lutheran faith, or it somehow invalidates any Lutheran support for the war in Iraq. That is a non sequitur. It doesn't follow. Our phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Just a few minutes left in open lines today on Issues Etc. If you'd like to get your opinion in, I know everyone has one, and those who say, well, I don't really have an opinion, well, please forgive me, but you really should. We are talking about war, and I'm sure you'll have one after it starts. Screw up your courage and have one now. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. A few odd things to simply throw before you as we round off this hour. The Vatican has recently spoken on two issues, somewhat disparate issues. The first one, the Vatican has given a thumbs up to Harry Potter. Here's the story from the Associated Press. The Vatican is giving two thumbs up to Harry Potter series. The good versus evil plot lines of the best-selling books are imbued with Christian morals, said a Vatican news official. I don't see any problems with the Harry Potter series. He was responding to questions following the release of a new Vatican document on the New Age movement, which I will share with you here in just a second. I don't think there's any room. There's anyone in this room who grew up without fairies, magic, angels in their imaginary world, he said. They aren't bad. They aren't serving as a banner for anti-Christian theology. If I have understood well the intentions of the Harry Potter's author, they help children see the difference between good and evil. She's very clear on this, he said. And in a related story mentioned there in this last one, The Vatican has also talked about the New Age movement. This is interesting. The Vatican weighed in on Monday last week on feng shui, which is how you arrange your furniture for spiritual harmony, crystals, and the Age of Aquarius in a new document designed to address, for instance, whether Christians could be in good standing while practicing yoga. The 90-page booklet called A Christian Reflection on the New Age doesn't provide any absolute answers, but while saying some positive things about the New Age movement, it warns that New Agers' quest for spirituality and inner peace can't take the place of the Christian religion. Excuse me, I must take a drink of tea. My throat grows tired. Thank you. That's what happens when you don't call, folks. Wilkin has to talk too much. Wilkin doesn't like it. It highlights that the core differences between the New Age movement and Christian thought are varied, whereas New Agers are waiting for an era where they are totally in command of the cosmic laws of nature, Christians are in a constant state of vigilance, ready for the last days when Christ will come again. Their New Age, says the document, began 2,000 years ago with Christ. The Vatican said that the preliminary document was the result of requests by bishops for guidance on whether the practices embraced by New Agers, including yoga, meditation, and healing by crystals, are compatible with Christianity. The booklet, which includes a glossary defining terms such as channeling, karma, and reincarnation, urges caution. I should say so. Wouldn't we want caution regarding these things? Channeling, karma, and reincarnation? More than caution, how about don't do this? It defines the Age of Aquarius as the astrological age that New Agers believe will usher in an era of harmony, justice, and peace following the current Age of Pisces, which has been marked by wars and conflicts. The Vatican document is silent on when the new Age of Aquarius begins. It lists feng shui, the ancient art of placing things to ensure harmony of energy flow, as an occult New Age practice that emphasizes being in tune with nature and the cosmos. This is interesting. With regard to karma, reincarnation, and channeling, it urges caution. But feng shui, basically designing for spiritual harmony, it says that is occult. We are going to discuss this new Vatican statement on the New Age movement with Father Mitch Pacwa. We're going to be talking with them a little bit later on issues, etc., so we can go into more detail on precisely what the Vatican had to say there. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc. Talk to you tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.